Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Most of my coaching and guidance through my Thrive Sober online video course. This is an easy to follow course containing 50 videos with backed up writing and recommendations that can be worked through in your own time. There is a brilliant app that you can download to access the course on your phone or your tablet. You can skip through the course choosing content you most need in that moment, or you can work through them from 1 to 50 in order. You can come back to the learning or redo sections to help with parts of emotional sobriety that you are struggling with. The course covers holidays, summertime, Christmas, socializing, what to read, identifying and coping with triggers, complacency, the 100-day moderation trap, breaking down old beliefs, managing your thoughts, sugar cravings, and plenty more. You will also get a free copy of my Thrive Sober ebook in the introduction section. Visit www.thrivesobercoaching.com/course to learn more or get access. Use coupon code HALFPRICE to get 50% off. I've had so many messages from people that say the ebook and the course together has been the thing to get them over the line and achieving their first 100 days successfully sober. Hello everyone. I don't usually add disclaimers or trigger warnings verbally before a podcast starts, but I wanted to do it with this episode because I actually feel quite vulnerable sharing some of my spiritual views. Some of you may know that I'm currently going through what I would call a spiritual awakening, which is unexpected, to be honest, and started happening for me several months ago, just before my father passed away, actually. And I think some of the events that have been happening in my personal life, with one of my children going into burnout and stopping going to school, and the pressure that that put on me as a person and on us as a family, it just sort of broke something open in me. And this awakening just started to happen. And I didn't really know what it was at first. Strange things started happening and I started to feel a little bit disconnected from things. And yeah, when I looked into it, I realized actually what was happening. I don't know how I realized it, but I guess in some ways I was kind of guided to content and books and podcasts that help to explain my experience. And so whilst it's quite positive and quite exciting, I do feel quite exposed in this podcast, weirdly, because obviously I've shared so much on my Instagram page and I've shared so much on this podcast. But for some reason, I think there's still quite a lot of taboo around spirituality. It's not something that a lot of people relate to, I think, unless they are awakened themselves. I always felt like I was quite spiritual, in inverted commas. But now I realize that being open to other people's spiritual beliefs is different to having a spiritual awakening yourself and really properly shifting the narrative of your life. And that's kind of where I am now. So in this episode, whilst there is another brilliant sobriety story, a lot of the focus is an exploration of all things spiritual, including my views. And I think the reason why I've got some anxiety about that is that I am aware that lots of people aren't on this path, and that's okay. You know, that's absolutely okay. But it's one of those things where you know that if people haven't been through it themselves, or if they can't relate to it, then they might not get a lot of the messages and a lot of the information in this podcast. And so I wanted to just flag that before we go into the episode, because some people right now might be thinking, no, this is probably not going to be for me. And that's fine. I almost want to give that option up front because I feel very vulnerable about this podcast. So yeah, I just thought I would allow people to have a pause and a moment of reflection to decide whether they wanted to continue with this episode or not. And some people might be curious, and that's great. In fact, some people might be awakening themselves and they might be thinking, yes, at last there's a podcast that's talking about sobriety and spirituality. Like, what a brilliant combination. And there might be people that thinks, what? I'm not sure what this is even going to, you know. So it could hit you in many different ways. And like sobriety, where sometimes it can feel quite isolating and you can feel like the only person on your team or in your family or in your group of friends that is going on this journey. And that feels quite exposing and there is vulnerability in that. That's exactly how I feel about this all over again. But whereas this time, I think that the pool of people that are have an understanding of where I might be right now in my life, I feel like that pool is probably slightly smaller than the sober space. And at least for now, I mean, who knows, people that are listening to this in 5 years time or 10 years time might be thinking, no, like everybody is spiritually awakening now. So, you know, this is out of date. And, you know, let's hope that is the case. But for now, I just wanted to share that vulnerability with you. So the other thing I wanted to do is to put a trigger warning. There is the mention of rape in this episode. And for some of you, that might be uncomfortable or upsetting. And I wanted to also make you aware of that before we go in. But now that I've spent a really long time explaining this podcast, why don't we jump into it?
Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm talking to Claire from Leeds. She's actually living in Lincolnshire at the moment, and Claire's been sober since Christmas just passed, and we worked out that that was 136 days. So yeah, welcome to the show, Claire. Really looking forward to hearing about your story.
Hi, it's lovely to be here. So yeah, currently living in Lincolnshire. I think we moved in 2022. Since 2020, dates have just don't exist for me. It's mad, isn't it? I'm currently a shamanic practitioner and Reiki master. I've been sober curious since 2019. So it's been a gradual process into sobriety. And it was Christmas last year that we were like, let's do this. Well, it was mainly me that said, let's go for it. Something just shifted. And I genuinely think it's the energy work that I've been doing that just got to a point where it was like, because when you increase your vibration, you can't take alcohol like you could. It just, you just can't do it. You try. And I did used to fight against it. And I'd, you know, sneak a glass of wine. But it'd be like, boom, because I used to have quite a good intolerance for it. And then it changed and I couldn't. And it was Christmas and I was like, something just shifted and I was like, I don't need to do this anymore.
Oh, I'm super excited about this conversation. Just for a bit of context for those of you that are listening, and the way that Claire and I even got connected is recently I posted on Instagram about why I'd been a bit quiet, because I have had some challenges at home with particularly with my eldest child going into autistic burnout, which we now know as autistic. Well, actually, it's the same as me, ADHD, but she's also PDA, which is, I prefer the term persuasive drive for autonomy. So anyway, I wrote this post and I'd kind of put that out there into the Insta world. And I'd also explained that in this very big kind of like life-changing last 6 to 8 months, I'd started to go through a spiritual awakening. I wasn't aware of what it was called at first. I just noticed that I started to feel quite differently about a lot of things in life, namely what the hell are we all here for type of, you know, conversation. And I couldn't stop thinking those sorts of thoughts. They were really started to take over. And I think actually looking back, I did try to, you know, ignore them a bit to begin with. I thought, I haven't really got time for this. Actually, I've got enough on my plate. But, you know, whatever's happening inside of me, which I've now realized is a spiritual awakening. I posted that, I put that information on that post, and then you reached out to me, Claire, didn't you, and connected with me because you'd been going through your own journey. Obviously, you are spiritually awakened, but, you know, you work in this area now. So that's super exciting to talk to you about that. But also you're on this alcohol-free journey. And we just decided that the timing was right. Let's just jump in and go for it. It's a real honor to have you on the show talking about something that will resonate with some people, because I'm sure there are people out there that are also going through a similar thing. And if you're anything like me, it feels a little bit lonely to be in this place early on in the journey. It's a bit like sobriety all over again, in that when I got sober, I was the only person in my group that didn't drink. And, you know, there wasn't the plethora of communities at that point. And I kind of just, you know, a lot of parts of my early sobriety, I white knuckled and just like, I just learned information as quickly as I could. But it was isolating, right? And I feel a bit like that now in my spiritual awakening, because none of my friends and family are in the same place as where I am. And when I talk about what I now I'm interested in or believe, I'm afraid to do that because people don't get it, and they probably think, I think they probably would worry about me, actually.
It's my job now. It's my job. Obviously, I'm married now and I'm much more balanced and stable than I was when I was drinking. But if we go out for a car or something, or like still in the house, and they say, oh, what's your job? My husband, he can say what his job is because it's science-based. But when I'm sat there going, what can I say? If I say clairvoyant, if I say mystic, if I say shamanic practitioner, Reiki man, and I can sit there getting really screwed up over it, and I'll end up going therapist.
Or
content creator.
Yeah, which is kind of true, but
because people will be like, oh, well, can you read my energy? Or my mum's just died, or, and you're just like, oh, no, I don't need this. Yeah, I think, though, the spiritual thing, what do you think of this? Because I think the spiritual awakening thing is getting like the drink thing, where some people, like, they were loud and proud with the drinking, and they, you could obviously see there was an issue, whereas some people kept it hidden. But what I'm trying to say is, like, I think everyone's got to go through this, but some people are keeping it hidden. It's that filthy corner of their life that they're not going to talk about, or their magic corner, or that dark aspect of them, where they'll get it out with certain people and they'll hide it around others. And
yeah, definitely. I've got huge visibility blocks around this, which is unusual, because most people that listen to this show or know me on Instagram, I am extremely transparent with my life with drinking. I've shared things on this podcast that sometimes have made me cry, like, the situation with my mom and just trauma that I've had in my life. I've been very open, and that's been healing for me, and that's been healing for others. I feel quite differently at the moment about spiritual awakening. And I think it's because, you know, the reactions that you get, much like the drinking world, to be honest, when you stop drinking, like, what on earth do you want to do that for? You know, people, especially science-based people, will be, you know, will mock it, or like, well, that's just woo-woo. And, you know, fortunately, I'm actually reading quite a bit about quantum physics at the moment. I never thought, honestly, I would be this person that would say I quite like quantum energy and quantum physics. And I've started to realize that, wow, the science world is starting to be able to prove the energy stuff that we're probably going to talk about, or that you experience. Science is now actually properly starting to record that through brainwaves and just lots of experiments. You know, I'm reading a book by Joe Dispenza, Becoming Supernatural, and he has that blend of science and spiritual, mystical, you know, and it's just fascinating. I feel like we're on the cusp of something that in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, maybe people will think, gosh, how did people not talk more about this? Because maybe more of the world would have woken up. But yeah, it's definitely something that I keep very much to myself, and but with people that are in this place where I am starting to get into, I feel like I could talk about it all day, you know. Favorite subject.
I think as well, I think, you know, and I genuinely believe this, that I think the drinking path, I think a lot of us that, I think all of us that have drunk heavily have been the ones that are meant to be the first to awaken. I really do. Because the amount of podcasts I've seen with ex-drinkers, the amount of people I've spoken to, the stuff my own spirit team have said to me about my, why I had to go down that path of drinking, because there's a lot you learn, especially when you become a healer or a therapist, that you learn from drinking, because drinking opens that dark portal up for you to learn about your own darkness, the darkness of the world, the darkness of pain, the raw anger of devastation. And I think that's a big part of the awakening, because there's so many people that, like ourselves, I see the Generation X and Millennials. Yeah. I always get mixed up between the Y and the X. They're like, you know, 50s, 40s, 30s. These are the people now that are coming back from alcohol addiction, drug addiction, and saying they've had these big epiphanies.
Yeah. It's really interesting as well, because I also wonder what the link is between neurodivergence and spiritual awakening, because one of the trends that I've certainly seen in my time interviewing people on the podcast and being in this sober community is the number of people, quite often women as well, that get sober 30s, 40s, 50s, and then the light bulb flashes on. Oh, I'm autistic. Oh, I'm ADHD. Oh, I'm ADHD or whatever. And it's almost like that's a bit of a gateway. I like that word portal. The portal thing is coming up a lot in the content that I watch. But yeah, that's like another portal as well. And you're so right, because I've been through, I feel like in my life, I've had a lot of trauma. I've had a lot of things that I've had to, you know, life lessons, a lot of deep learning from my early life. You know, it's not a competition, but I would say when I was younger, I felt like I had a bigger share of that than a lot of my peers. Mm. And then that carried on a bit, you know, that, and then the drinking made it all a bit chaotic as well. And then that created its own little branch of trauma on top. And so then you go through this kind of like stop drinking, start to get to know who you are a bit more, you put some boundaries, you get a bit more self-care, curious, and you do some good work there. And then I've then gone on this journey of the neurodivergent thing, like, wow. And like you say, all of this darkness is really helping me to appreciate the light. And that's actually really helping me to guide other people. Mm-hmm. To not be afraid of their own darkness and to step into the light and to embrace it and accept it, which is very, very freeing. And it's only through this process that now I feel like at the, you know, the grand age of 47, that I'm going through this sort of like bigger awakening, and I'm starting, everything's starting to slot into place. And I'm really starting to see, okay, this is what it was all about. You know, weirdly, I get kind of goosebumps when I talk about it, which, you know, I always think is kind of my energy getting excited.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think, you know, I have neurodivergency. I think they are the awakened ones, you know, in the spiritual community. My feeling on it is in a few years' time, it won't even be classed as an illness.
Do you know what?
People are actually seeing it for what it is, that these are special souls.
Yes,
that are here to teach us something and show us something, that are here to tell us to slow down, turn that music off in the department stores, stop drinking, stop doing the drugs, all the fast way of living. They're here to teach us something.
Yeah. Do you know, it's so interesting. We will get into your story with alcohol in a moment. That's fine. But it's so interesting because when I did my Reiki training, my level one, because you're a Reiki practitioner, aren't you? Mm. But when I spoke about kind of like recent, you know, the thing at home with my eldest and her going into like this kind of autistic burnout and stopping going to school, you know, she was also clairvoyant, and she was talking about how autistic, ADHD, they're all higher vibrational energy beings, and, you know, basically saying the same sort of thing that you were. And I was thinking about this, about, isn't it so funny that we have all these labels for for all of this now? To be honest, a label that I'm personally absolutely comfortable with at the moment, because I think it explains to the rest of society what my differences are. That's why it's useful, right? It doesn't really kind of change me, but it helps me to explain to everyone else, you know, perhaps, you know, so that they don't misinterpret who I am. But I thought there will be a world where none of this will matter soon, and actually we will shift. Definitely we're already shifting away from disorder and deficit based language to differences, and that's really important. And differences, you know, might mean sooner than later that, you know, that there are special gifts with these sorts of people. They are here to change the world, and they are here to do things differently. And just on that point, my daughter not going to school, you know, I've had to come out of that conventional mindset of like, oh my God, children are supposed to go to school and that's what is supposed to happen. I've had to move away from that model and say, no, you know, she school is not right for her. And you know, she is not right for school either, because she's not meant to be here to follow all the rules. And I know some people might find that quite strange, like, but she's a child. But actually I have a very, very deep intuition that she will be successful in her life and she will achieve really great things. She won't do it the way that we've just set up the world, you know, that kind of like, you've got to go through that tunnel A and that's the only option. Yeah. Oh, she's digging her own tunnel over here and it's got rainbows in it, and it's like a much nicer place to be. And it's, yeah, it's just interesting having this conversation, really, because it's very, very close to my heart.
And that's what the world's meant to be. We've been fooled to think that we've got to, you know, do this, do that, earn lots of money. We've been put in this box, whereas, you know, this group of people are coming in to say, actually, you've got it all wrong.
Yeah.
And we're going to be the trailblazers to do things differently.
Yeah.
We're all very different. We've all got different eyes, different hair, different bodies, different. So why are we all trying to live the same life and do it a certain way?
Yeah, I love that. So let's talk about you a bit more here then. So go back to the beginning. What was your life like with alcohol? And how did that, you know, talk about that, if you can, alongside where you are, you know, the spiritual awakening and how all of that happened for you?
Okay, so I've always believed in spirit. I've always believed, I and stuff, they did readings and all psychometry and all that kind of stuff. So I've always believed in it. I went to work as a dental nurse and went to train as a dental nurse, work as a dental nurse. I didn't actually drink in my teenage years. I started, what would it be, 22 or 23. I got my heart broken. It was as simple as that. I started earning money, got qualified as a dental nurse, got my heart broken, and a group of friends said, you know, like, let's go out for a drink. I didn't think out of it. So I went out for a drink and I loved it. I loved the fact that this liquid took the edge off things. And there were people there, and I got this confidence because I was really shy. And I had this group of people that started to grow around me. And the more I did it, the more I wanted. So I was drinking all the time, not all the time, but yeah, I loved it. I loved the bars. I loved the feeling of being drunk. I loved the stories afterwards. I loved the fact that my confidence went woof and that was it. And I felt like I was my true self. And then, you know, when you start drinking, you start to make wrong decisions. And I started to have other failed relationships and situationships. And then I made a very terrible mistake of, I went away one afternoon with a consultant that I worked with, an NHS consultant, and I was raped. And I just spiraled. And it wasn't just partying, it was just self-medicating all of the time. Bottles of wine, hiding bottles of wine. I mean, I managed to work full-time, I don't know how. Looking back, I must have stunk of booze, but I didn't. You'd ever smell it on yourself. And I was just spiralling, lonely, making bad decisions, drinking all of the time, going out. And it was like I didn't know when to stop. That bit that says to you, stop drinking or stop eating, just didn't work. It wasn't there, it had died. And then I went into therapy and I started to stabilise a bit then. That must have been around about 2012. Started to hit 30, so started to stabilise. Stepped out of work for 6 months and I was all right. Still went out drinking, but not to the extent, and everything was fine. And then when I went back to work, the work environment that I worked in was so toxic. you know, consultants that wielded their power, toxic nurses, senior nurses. And it was a very big drinking culture, a huge drinking culture. And it was that we used to laugh about it, you know, on a Thursday night, we're going to go drinking tonight. And everybody was drinking. You know, people go out on Christmas dues and it was getting smashed all the time. And then I'd have periods of where I'd level up and then I'd be fine. And then I'd plateau and sink down again. And then I met my current husband now, and then I had to go back because I worked across two hospitals, and I had to go back to work at my previous hospital where the attacker was. But he left. I was told he's left. He's gone. It's safe to come back. And anyway, one lunchtime I was sat there and he appeared again. And I turned around, and because when you have trauma, sometimes you can have flashbacks and all kinds of things. So I was like, what's he doing? So I actually left the building, had 2 weeks off, and then I went back to work and I had a meeting with the bigwigs there. And I said, oh, I thought he'd left. Why is he back? And they said, well, because he earns us money. When he comes into the building, people pay to be trained by him.
Did they know about what had happened to you?
They knew. The police had told them, I told them, everybody had told them. They knew. There was no information withheld. They knew. And I said, yeah, but it was like, but I'll tell you what, I swear to God, and I've thought about this a lot, when you whistleblow in an institution like that, it's easier to get rid of the nurse or the dental nurse or the cleaner or the porter than it is to face the culprit. And I swear to God, call me paranoid, but there was a commission to try and for me to either hand my notice in or be sacked. Because when I look back now, some of the things that were going on and the pressure that was being put on me was just sick.
Oh, that's so awful. Yeah, so sorry to hear about that.
No, it's fine. And then I think it was about a couple of months before my wedding, and I rang my husband, well, fiancé, up, and he was like, just leave. I was like, really?
Oh, well,
I was so programmed to think that you had to stay in the same job forever. He was like, no, just leave. I'll look after you. And I said, we're going to get married and everything. So it doesn't matter. Because he was a big earner then. So I left, got married, had the honeymoon, drunk heavily on honeymoon. We both did, because you meet someone here in that drinking culture. Mm. And I still managed to drink, and it was just getting nowhere, having these horrific hangovers. And then one morning he woke up in my other half and he says, I'm really worried about you. And it was just the devastation in his eyes and seeing the tears in his eyes. And it was like, whoa. So I really pulled it back. And it was like, well, what am I going to do with my life? Now, I knew I had a calling to do something. And that's when I started going into the spiritual work. In fact, originally I was going to go into hair and makeup and nails. And I went and did all these courses. But I got pulled into the Reiki. And then I got pulled into doing my own healing. So receiving Reiki and receiving shamanic healing, which shamanic healing removes all kinds of big stuff.
Yeah.
And it just went on from there. And then I think it was, I set up my own business, Mystical Garden, which was a day spa. And I remember it was, let me get my, the end of 2019, my husband had got up to go for work and I fell back to sleep again. And I had a dream that there was a big flood coming down the street, and I had a hot tub and everything, summer house, and it all got swept away. And I ran into the kitchen, and my main guide was in the kitchen watching this tsunami sweep everything away. And I screamed, do something, you're the magic one, do something, stop it, make it stop. And he said, let it go, we'll focus on the spiritual. And I was like, and I woke up and I was like, what does he mean?
My God.
And that was just before 2020 came. And literally when 2020 came, because I was a day spa, massage and facials, I was finished. And I laid on the sofa and I was like, well, what am I going to do? And, you know, my husband had tried to get me into doing video work. And I was like, I'm too shy to do video work. Give me a drink and I'll do video work.
Yeah.
And my guides kept saying, go global and do YouTube. And I went on YouTube and I changed the business during 2020. And by the time all the lockdown stuff had started to lift, I didn't want to go back. I wanted to do the online stuff I do now. And it just went from strength to strength.
Wow.
I'd just done my shamanic training as well in 2019. So I just qualified at the beginning of 2020 to be a shamanic practitioner. And I just didn't look back. I, when we, in fact, we then hit, it kind of like rippled across the marriage, because then he wanted to make changes. So he went from quite a high influential job and highly paid to stepping back into a different role that meant we came from Leeds, which was inner city living, drinking and all of that, into country living in Lincolnshire.
Yeah.
And less stress. And now he's stepping into my bit. Well, it wouldn't be a joint business because he's going to do it. He's on his Reiki.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That is incredible. So we'll carry on with the drinking thing in a minute, obviously. Mm. The main reason why we're here. But just because I'm so interested. When you say, you know, your parents talked about spirit world and you've always had that sort of interest in it. How, you know, when you talk about your guys and your spirit team and all of that, like, how does that happen for you? And when did that start happening? And has that always been there?
Yeah, it has always been there, and I denied it. When I went to work as a dental nurse, I was just concentrating on that eat, sleep, rave, repeat lifestyle.
Yeah.
I'd have a little bit of a flutter now and again, get my cards out, but it was very rare. And it was all like, oh yeah, Claire's got the third eye, she can see spirit. But that was it. It was, I was pushing it down, but it was on honeymoon when we went on a cruise around North America and Canada, and I woke up and I could hear this like Native American flute music, and my husband had gone out because obviously I was hungover, and he said, "Oh, there's Native Americans all on the platform outside, and they play music. It's beautiful," and I just went, "Oh my God!" and covered over. And it disturbed me at the time, because what a reaction to something so beautiful. And my guide said, that's because you were trying to deny it. Yeah. Because it can be such a responsibility to do this work. Yeah. And there's a lot of wounding about being mocked and how do you fit in? You know, you've already been a high drinker and made all those mistakes. You've already got the stigma of rape, and I want more stigma put on me. Yeah. But then you realise it's not stigma. So the guides have always been there.
Yeah.
Because I'd hear not voices in like in a schizophrenic sense, but something speaking through me that I would try and push back.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. It really makes sense, because I'm really deep diving a lot of this at the moment. But I would say that I'm someone that in this last 6 to 8 months, my intuition has become very, very razor sharp. And I use my intuition. I'm starting to really realize that something guides me when I work with clients. I will write a word down, or I'll write something down, and then they'll say it, you know, something like that. So I'm starting, because I'm paying more attention, I'm noticing more, right? This stuff might have always been there, but I just didn't see it. But when it comes to conversations with spirit team and guides, I don't have that. Like, it's not happening. How do you feel? Oh, it's not happening yet. It's not happening yet.
I think it will be. I think it's already happening. It's already. This is where you're getting this from.
Yeah.
Because when they talk to you, they talk to you through your own voice. So you hear your voice through your ears.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I've really started to notice that when I'm talking about this stuff, or when I'm coaching with clients, I get this feeling like someone's, you know, people would say someone's stepping over my grave. Mm-hmm. I get like that. I get a pulse. I feel cold. I feel it now.
Funny,
like something's brushing me. And I've started to connect the dots, and I think, well, this information is coming from somewhere. Sometimes I'll say, it's interesting actually, because I said this to my husband the other day, I'm giving guidance to clients that sometimes, like, the creativity that's coming out and the ideas that I'm giving them, I almost want to make notes of it so that I don't forget it, because I don't necessarily know where it is all coming from. I mean, I am very well read, right? And I absorb so much information. I absorb information a lot. And I think a lot of that and that lived experience and that ability to reframe things. And I don't know, I feel like I've got a real skill there, like a gift in that, in a way. But yeah, I'm starting to think that maybe that is for me the way that it's, you know, because I'm sort of a bit like you. I want the dream where, you know, the lady with the fluttery angel wings is standing in my kitchen and she's going, "Terry, do this and do that." But, you know, I know enough now to know that it comes in different shapes and forms and sizes, and it's never usually how you want it either. When it comes.
Yeah, it's how you need it, isn't it?
I was going to ask you off the back of that. I was going to ask you then, What is your insight or your feeling or your experience of that? Actually, everybody has this ability to mm-hmm. connect with the universe or whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, guides, universe, etc., and that it can be practiced and that it can be developed. Mm-hmm. Where do you sit on that?
So everyone is going to awaken, either in this life or the next. And I'll take it right back to the beginning. The Earth had an energetic grid around her. So her as being in Mother Earth, she had an energetic grid to protect her energetically. And what happened, we all had these ancient civilizations like Atlantis, is it got cracked, it got damaged. So it started to let in the lower dimensional frequencies. So like we've got angels and things like that, we've got other beings as well and other feelings and emotions. And I'm not saying in this that some things are lower vibrational than others, like greed and gluttony started to come in and lust, and humans lost themselves. And it spiraled on. We drank, we ate, we had sex with all kinds of people and we did all kinds of stuff. And we became in pain and depressed and we lost our way. And then bring it back to our times, we drank, people took drugs, we tried to fit in, we lost our soul, we didn't even realise about souls. But what's happened is because Mother Earth is part of a cosmos, she is the lowest vibrating planet because of what's happened to her, all the wars, the rape, the pillage and everything. So she has to lift her frequency up. So the frequencies have started to change on the planet and people are starting to wake up to their spirituality in many different ways. And there was the cosmic event in 2012, which is when like a whole range of people wake up. 2020, a whole range of people wake up to themselves. There's one coming in 2032 as well. So everyone's going to be doing it in very similar ways, but very unique ways. Mm. And people like ourselves that have gone down these dark avenues were actually part of the reason for that, because there's past life teaching as well. But it's because you're meant to be of service to people, which is why you're getting a lot of people on podcasts and YouTube channels and doing talks, because people are in pain. Humanity is in pain. That's why people drink. That's why people take drugs, because they're in pain. Mm. It's a gradual process, but it's also intense. And even it's science backed now. There's a thing called the Schumann resonance, where I've got it on my phone, and it measures the frequency of the planet and the energy of the planet, and that is increasing. Mm. I think it used to be at 4.6, and now it's at between 8 and 10.6. So it's changing rapidly.
And what's changing that? More people awakening.
More people awakening, and the fact that Earth had lost itself, it had gone really dark and dense and all kinds of deep, dark and dangerous stuff happening on the Earth. Whereas now the people of Earth have gone, do you know what? We need to change. So because more people are waking up spiritually, there's more chance for that connection, it can grow, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
It's like the bad apple. We're not bad apples, but we're like the glowing apple. It's like, you know, it's everything's frequency. So say you're sat on the bus and you're feeling quite nice, you're feeling quite positive, but the person next to you feels anxious. Mm. You can start to feel anxious. Mm. And it's the same with this, it ripples out. Whereas the denseness has been the rippling energy and it's been the most profound energy, that's tipped. And it's almost like humanity has said, actually, we're going to listen to the light now, we're not going to reject it. So it can come in closer to try and help us. Yeah. And as people, you know, if you walk into a room and everyone's really dull and boring and it's just a real tension, it brings the energy down.
You feel it, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. But if you wake up and everyone's feeling happy, it lifts you up. Well, it's the same with the planet. Because if you think our energy field, they say, goes out up to 30 feet.
Well, so I've heard.
And it's like, wow.
So we're constantly always crossing with other people. We're always blending or merging or bumping into other people's energy fields because they're quite, you know, if we're surrounded by this big bubble and when we're in a room, I think about that a lot when I'm in my Blaze class, which is my favorite class at the gym. I think about how we're all in this tiny room, like not only are we like on top of each other sweating and, you know, all of that, but I think about what all of our energies are all merging together. I find that quite bizarre. Which is a thought that I'd never really had before. And that's the really funny thing about this spiritual awakening is it's that I always felt like I was quite open spiritually. I was often drawn to, you know, I was kind of open-minded, right? I didn't really grow up in a spiritual household. My family are like, some of my family are religious, but I was never really religious. But in my 20s, I bought angel cards and I read books, you know, like Celestine Prophecy and just bits and bobs like that. And I started to be on this journey. And then for some reason, it's quite interesting when I reflect on it now, I sort of shut it all down. I got into a relationship and I sort of, and which I think I, in that relationship, you know, it taught me a lot, that relationship, because I think I was always, quite often trying to be somebody that I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I shut that bit of myself down. And I was, you know, I didn't want to be laughed at and that sort of thing. This relationship and this family, extremely science-based. Mm-hmm. And anything would be, you know, anything that was outside of that would just be laughed at. And I didn't want to be laughed at. So I just sort of shut mm-hmm. it down. And so I find it quite interesting because somebody wrote on my post recently, how do you go through a spiritual awakening? And I responded only in the best of my knowledge, right? I'm no expert. I'm only like a few months into this. But I said, do you know what? It finds you, you don't find it, you know? And it's almost like you can, I think you can read the books because I've been there. I've read some of the books before, but this door opened for me and I didn't want, you know, I wasn't seeking it. And it opened and I had no choice. I had no choice but to look at it now. And now that I've looked at it, everything's starting to, I'm extremely open to it. Everything I read, the content that I see on it, I believe it straight away. Because I'm like, yeah, it resonates. It's true. I know it's true. And it's just really interesting that that happens, that it's not something that, yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say really here, but it's almost like you can go along in life and this just doesn't mean anything. Even this conversation that you and I are having, probably a lot of listeners will be like, what on earth is this? This, what are you talking about? And I get that, right? Because, you know, I was that person a bit too. But suddenly this is like, it's literally come and slapped me in the face. And it's like, oh, okay, this is happening. And now I feel like, oh my God, everything that I thought, everything that I was, everything, the way that I thought life, what, everything is different. It's all changed. Like even my own children, sometimes I look at my children and I think, who are you? And I know that sounds quite creepy and quite weird. But I think on a soul level, I'm, you know, all of that stuff that would be probably too much to go into in this episode, sadly, but that I know that you know what I mean. It's just everything is so different and it's like when you go on to social media and Instagram, and this is where I think social media and Instagram, and you know, it's really positive. It's connecting you with the messages and with this other world, and it's making you feel a little bit less alone. And it's quite crazy to think about all the different ages of people that it just seems to be hitting right now. And it's almost a bit like, there's got to be a reason for that. Like, we're not all like, how is it that a big portion of society is thinking in one way that's so differently from another in a way? Do you know what I mean? And it's sort of like, you know, people that think, well, they're just crazy or you know, whatever the words are. But are we really? Because we're all thinking, we're all going through the same thing. And isn't that quite weird?
Because it's gradual as well. Because I've asked this, why can't we all just do it at the same time and make it so easy? But like, the guides are like, yeah, but think about it. If everybody went through this at the same time, because some spiritual awakenings can be chaotic, can be really painful, can be dark night of the souls. It's not all, you know, it can be really scary. If you all went through this at the same time, it'd be pandemonium. They're kind of, so you kind of need the balance to be at the minute 50-50. To balance it, otherwise it'd just, it's a difficult one because you think, well, surely it'd be brilliant, but it kind of wouldn't because it'd be all this chaos. And it's almost like you've got to have a group of people that can go through it to help the others to be the lighthouse. It's like I have clients that will say to me, oh God, my partner won't awaken, and oh my God, why, you know, mum won't awaken, dad won't awaken, why is it just me? And it's like, yeah, but you're doing yours now, so you can be a stable force when they're going through it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got like a husband and wife or a, you know, girlfriend in the same house that went through it at the same time.
Yeah, it would be something. Mm. Then also I think that, I suppose the confusion that I have is that, you know, almost like, what's the point of coming here if we're all spiritually awake anyway, in some ways, because my understanding is that we, you know, choose to come here to planet Earth to learn, you know, lessons X, Y, Z. You can't, you know, to have that human experience, have that physical human experience. And so, you know, and so as part of that coming to Earth is that we choose to forget, and that's okay. We sort of sign up for that. And so how would it work then if we just all, like, life would be so different if we all just knew we're here just so that, you know, it, like, nothing would, I don't know, it'd be so different. I don't understand that, I guess. Like, what would be the purpose of being awake?
It could be like it was before, but have you heard of the New Earth theory? That will be in a, no, some people think it's going to be a physical New Earth. Some people think it's going to be an energetic. I'm somewhere in the middle on that, where the New Earth is, because the old Earth that we've got now is broken. Nothing to do with Mother Earth. It's the fact that the physical Earth is broken, humanity. And that the New Earth is where we're going to be having, we're going to be operating through a consciousness of love. Mm. Not hate, not anger, not resentment, not gluttony. It's going to be very different. And we're transitioning now. Mm-hmm. It's like a pregnancy, you know, the woman, she starts to feel a bit strange and a bit, I feel a bit sick and I feel, ugh. And then she finds out she's pregnant and she goes through all that, you know, the pregnancy, and then the birth is, can be painful, and there's blood and there's shit and there's all of that, and she feels ripped open and raw, and all these people coming in and like, get away, and not wanting to be touched. Well, that's the spiritual awakening. And then there's the baby, and it's like, oh, that's beautiful. And then there can be the baby blues.
Yeah.
So we're rebirthing ourselves.
Yeah. It's quite,
we're rebirthing ourselves, because, you know, before, we've never rebirthed ourselves. We've just done as.
Mm.
We've been so asleep spiritually. We've just existed. You know, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, people like ourselves would have just drunk ourselves to oblivion and died or ended up sectioned. But because of this changing frequency, it's part of the awakening. We've been able to stop it.
So fascinating. I could honestly talk about, I really wish that I could talk about it all day. But let's go a little bit now to your story of how you actually, you know, how did this all play into you stopping drinking? So you did your training and, you know, got a little bit more involved in this online thing with your spiritual work. Why did you stop drinking? What happened?
My brother is an alcoholic. He's a recovering alcoholic, and he was really bad. I mean, like, he was into cocaine and everything, you know, doing all kinds of stuff. And he kept having these episodes where he'd go off and he'd go missing. So he had a fiancé and two daughters as well. So we'd think he were dead. He'd be gone. And when he came back home, he'd be in a state, a real, real state. And then he went in, and then, you know, he kept doing this. And then he went to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was also aware that my patriarchal energies, masculine energies, they're alkies. Mm-hmm. You know, like, my dad struggled with his drink, uncles struggled with drinks, mm-hmm. auntie died of alcoholism. So the fact is, there's something within me physically that likes mm-hmm. a good drink.
Yeah.
And that needs to be looked after and watched, because I don't think I can just go out and have one.
Mm-hmm.
It just leads to 10, which leads to 20, which... So it was like, wait a minute, I'm still drinking. I wasn't drinking like I was, because I'd really cut it back, but it was like, it's still a big part of my life.
Mm.
I can't imagine having a birthday and not drinking. I can't imagine going on holiday and not drinking. Mm. And then it really made me think about my ancestral line, because that is part of the healing, that, you know, your ancestors. And it's like, well, my ancestors are alkies, some of them. And it's like, this isn't good. Mm. And it came up in the healing. So we got the app Dry January. So as he's going through the All Alcoholics Anonymous stuff, we did the Dry January, and we said, let's have a sober year. And we did it. And it was like, by then I was in a stronger position at before, without the Reiki and the shamanic healing and the connection to spirit, I couldn't have done it. I tried and I just couldn't do it. I just itch, and I could not have a drink. Especially in those times that I'd become dependent on. And we did it for a year. And we got the alcohol, you know, and you put it on your little, yellow, it was like your yellow and black app, and it felt good, ping, ping, and every day it was like brilliant. Mm. And then the next year, it was like, let's just drink on birthdays and anniversaries. And that worked. Mm. And then it was Christmas last year, we went out for Christmas too, and it was like, sod it, let's just enjoy ourselves. And we felt so shocking, horrific. And the guides were like, well, you're going to feel it, you're going to feel it. This is what happens. And it was like, oh my God. And then still, Christmas Day came, Boxing Day came, let's have a drink. And it was on the 28th when something just clicked, some trauma, some response or whatever it was, just that was it. And I was like, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not doing it.
Wow. So you've had a year of working. Yeah, okay. And then, yeah, went back to it. And so talk me through, so something clicked and there was a shift in energy, probably literally for you. What came then? What happened then? Like, you know, what's been the journey for this last 136 days?
We've just not drunk. We've not drunk. We recently celebrated 10 years together. This is interesting as well, because this was this weekend we've just had. So it's 10 years since we first met. And we said, let's go back to Leeds and relive the first day. And we got into Leeds, and Leeds was where I used to go drinking. So that was like a big trigger. Mm. And the bars were there, the old memories were there, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Walking around these bars, and it was like, oh God, let's just do it. But we didn't. And I just, rather than trying to stop myself, I just sat there and thought, right now I could just do with a drink. And right now I'm really pissed off that I can't have a drink. And I just felt it. I didn't put any good or bad, this isn't spiritual. I just thought, right now I'm pissed off that I can't have a drink. And I just felt it. And then it went. And that's what I'm saying to my clients at the minute, because in the spiritual community, there can be an aspect of toxic positivity where positive vibes only, and if you're doing it right, you're not going to feel this. But I say to the clients, when you're feeling anxious, say to someone, I'm feeling anxious. Or when you're saying, I feel angry, I could rip someone's head off, own it. Because when you don't and you suppress it down, that's when it becomes disease. That's when it becomes the addiction.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes a trauma. In that moment, go, God, she's pissed me off so much. Feel it. That, because the body feels it. If I, God forbid, cut my finger right now, and I'd feel blood. I'd see blood coming out and I'd feel pain. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I wouldn't think out of it. I'd think, oh, shit, I've cut my finger. I'd get a plaster. I'd cover it up. I possibly won't use it for a while or whatever. But if I'm in pain emotionally, I suppress it down. It's bad.
Yeah.
And yeah. I felt I was in Leeds and I just went, God, I'm so pissed off. Like, you know, why did I have to become such a reckless drinker? And then it just stopped and I ended up looking around, I mean, in City Square, and I went, you know what? I want to have it given. And I was free. And it was like, I would not have it given. If somebody said to me, here's some magic dust, we'll make it where you can just have one. Like, no, you're fine.
I love that. I've not heard that term before. I wouldn't have it given. Is that a Leeds term?
I don't possibly. I wouldn't have it given.
Yeah, the way that I translate that is and a bit like what you said with the dust. There was a time when I felt like if I could have a bottle of wine without any consequences, I would have done it. I still would have had it, right? Mm. But there was a time also then when I thought, no, why would I do that? Like, why would I want to feel woozy and like I can't get my words out properly, and that I've got to walk into the living room and try really hard to talk normally so that my husband doesn't know that I've had three glasses of wine more than I said I'd have.
Yeah, but it's just, it's feeling it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Also as well, I think the whole perimenopause thing that women are going through now, including myself, I was very lucky. I had a friend back in the day that was a lot older than me, and she's in spirit now, but she was an alcoholic, and she shared that when she hit 40, she went into, well, she called it the menopause. They didn't know about perimenopause back then, and she started self-medicating with booze and became an alky. And I'm so thankful for that friendship, because when I hit my 40s, I felt that same, I just need a drink. And there's so many women now that are struggling with the perimenopause. And I genuinely think it's some aspect of it is the alcohol. Our grandmothers never had that. Great grandmothers.
Yeah.
It's our generation. We had such a thing with drink culture in the noughties that it's become the answer to everything.
Yeah.
I can't imagine now feeling really hormonal having a drink. I think I'd go off the rails.
Same. I couldn't, you know, life is tough enough as it is a lot of the time, you know, without the added pressure and, you know, huge inconvenience of being hungover and self-loathing and managing too much cortisol, too much anxiety, and all of those things. And I think that's quite interesting because our, you know, a lot of our mothers, grandmothers, the stories are quite often, not all the time, obviously, because my mum actually was an alcoholic. But, you know, a lot of the stories are, you know, we couldn't afford to drink when the kids were young. We didn't really do it. Like, nobody really drank. It was only really when they got a bit older and the kids had blown the nest that they started to feel a bit more like, oh, yeah, like we'll have the wine, we'll have the holidays, we'll have the dinners out or whatever. And I mean, to be honest, my grandma never drank really, you know, at all. You just have a sherry at Christmas type of thing. But I think that the culture probably generally was a bit like that. Like, you know, the for all its, you know, downsides with the patriarchy and all of that stuff, I don't know if there was as much regular drinking from a teenage age in older generations. And that has been something. And actually, weirdly, we're in a bit of a, weirdly, we're sort of in a in our own little lane in time, because now I would say that the younger generation are also not really maybe drinking. Well, the figures say that they're not taking up alcohol as much. So we're in this pocket of time where people born, you know, maybe late 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, where we just have been very big drinkers because culturally, that was the norm. And so there is this wave, especially like we're obviously both women. And so we're kind of probably more connected to women because of that. But certainly I've seen women in my community or women that I work with and that I coach. The stories are all very similar. They're drinking from a teenager, hitting perimenopause, or, you know, and then there's the neurodivergence thing on top, you know, so just similar stories, you know.
It's strange, isn't it? It's profound as well. It's profound that this generation that, like you said, 60s, 70s, I think more so the you know, people that were born late 70s into the 80s, mid to, that there was something with us that we were broken for some time.
Yeah. But like you say, like linking back to our conversation earlier, maybe that was all part, you know, maybe that's all part of the grand plan. Maybe that's why there is this surge in people waking up and more spiritually aware.
But when we were walking around Leeds the other night, it was like the amount of bars that are closing. And I even said to my husband, Gary, I said, it's not like when we used to go out, town was heaving. And this was a Saturday night. And the amount of bars that have closed down and you know, stopping drinking a lot earlier than what we did in the early hours. So there is that, all these pubs closing down. I know people are saying that people are starting to drink indoors, but
yeah. Yeah. But also, the figures would also say that even the numbers of people in this pocket of time that we're talking about, in these age ranges, you know, people that were born 70s to noughties or whatever, there's a lot of those people getting sober now and actually turning their back on alcohol. And obviously there's still huge numbers of people drinking, but more and more people, you know, it's becoming more of a thing. It's becoming more acceptable. It's becoming even in some cases quite cool to be, you know, the one that's not drinking and to be alcohol free. And that's also being demonstrated in the numbers of alcohol free drinks. I mean, how they're skyrocketing. I mean, when I first stopped drinking 6 years ago, it was literally Beck's Blue. And now alcohol-free drinks have their own, pretty much their own aisle, which is great, right? Which is really good. But that shows that there is that change. So there's little changes, profound, like you say, profound.
Soft changes. Drinks as well. Soft drinks are becoming more like the different tonic waters you can get. And like back in the day, it was just tonic water, whereas now it's like strawberry tonic water, peach tonic water and orange tonic water. And you're not using them without, you're just using them as part of your drink.
Yes, yeah, elderflower and stuff like that. Elderflower sales must have skyrocketed in the last 3 or 4 years. Everyone's getting it. Elderflower and sprigs of rosemary. There we go. So, so for you then, have you done anything else outside of, you know, just not drinking and obviously connected to yourself very, you know, spiritually, and that's really helping. And you had this moment in the weekend, congratulations, by the way, on 10 years, you had this moment where you had this like lesson pop off, essentially, real time, which was like, just feel it and let it pass. You know, that's the really interesting thing, isn't it? That actually this discomfort can be gone in minutes, even if minutes, right? We're talking minutes, you know. What else have you learned in the process not drinking?
To love yourself more, to love myself more, respect myself more. And the fact that this is a body, it's not the body's a temple. They do say that. And also as well, something that came through this morning, because I was thinking about my past drinking and I felt a bit ashamed of it. And one of the things the guide said was actually, don't be ashamed of it, because when you look at what alcohol does to it, to a human being, it lowers the energy field. Yeah. It lowers the energy field, which allows other stuff to come in. So a lot of what we did, said and experienced actually kind of wasn't our fault. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to blame an artist of the drink. When you actually look at the spirituality around, the reason they call it the demon drink, there's a reason for that. And you'll see people that have like blackouts of not being able to remember. And it was that was society's medicine. Whereas now you go on and there's yoga, there's exercise, there's nature, there's therapy, there's podcasts. Mm. Back in the noughties when we were on 90s or noughties when we were in pain, it was, you know, have a fag, take some drugs, drink something. That was it, really. If you wanted to do anything else, you had to really search for it.
Yeah.
And even then society was so dense that you had to really search for it. You know, even you go on telly now, it's in bars, it's in restaurants, drinking. That was the answer. You broke up with someone, we'll take you out for a drink.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people that drunk heavily, including myself, there's a lot of guilt there and a lot of punishment going on. Mm. And that is a substance that destroys you spiritually, destroys you mentally. Mm.
Yeah.
It's not like you went out and did all those things sober.
No.
Something was in your system spiraling, you having a chemical effect, and to forgive ourselves for that.
No,
I think as well, making peace with it. Like, I've been thinking about, because of this podcast, would I change things in the past? No,
yeah,
because it's made me. It's, you know, it's you. The job I'm doing now is the job I was always meant to do, and they were all the qualifications I had to get. Mm. How can you sit and help people that have gone through trauma if you've never experienced trauma?
Yeah.
The amount of people I get that have got addictions or trauma or rape victims, abuse victims. So everything we've had to go through is either to help us become who we are or to help us be of service as well, or both, or all of it.
Yeah. And that's just so beautiful, you know, because I feel the same way, you know. Now the thing that I felt about, you know, the perspective that I had about my early life and the things that I went through, the victim mentality that I got stuck in for a while, you know, why is this happening to me? Why me? I just want to have a good, you know, I don't want to have that stuff anymore. And now realize that they're the building blocks. The reason why I can work with someone for 6 weeks and I feel like I can really change their life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, that's so powerful to be able to do that and to give that to somebody else, and to feel that, you know, because you must feel like this as well, like the reward that you feel giving back and helping and helping other people heal, everybody that you help to heal, another little bit where you smooth out the chink in your own healing journey as well. It's so dual, isn't it? That relationship, it goes both ways. It's quite
definitely. Definitely. So I think like the past version of us, it's about sending love. And I did that in Leeds. I you know, some of the bars have obviously gone, but I visualised the bars and I visualised the noughties and I visualised my young self and I gave her a hug and I sent her the love that she didn't get. And it just clears it. Stop judging her. You stop. I'm not going to talk about that aspect of my life. I'm going to just suppress her. Because life can become one long suppression.
Yes.
And it's even when we're healing, it can become a suppression because it's got to be positive, it's got to be high vibe. Now get that stuff up and look at it.
Yeah.
Look at it. Dance with it. You've danced with the devil, why not dance with your trauma?
Yeah. I love that because that's why I feel this podcast today is very different to every podcast I've done. because it's sharing something that's extremely vulnerable for me. Mm. I know you're working in this area, and so I appreciate your guiding hand in this. But for me, this is really like this, like I said, I've got these visibility blocks around this. I'm scared of people knowing about this side of me at the minute, right? I won't always feel like that. But I'm scared right now. But I feel powerful in that fear. I feel powerful in that vulnerability to share this. I feel powerful that you know, that it's okay to share this stuff and to be open and to let this stuff just come out, if that makes sense, because I don't want to suppress anything anymore, you know, I don't want to suppress. And even this shadow work that I'm doing, you know, where I'm looking at the, you know, the easiest way to describe this to listeners that don't know about shadow work, and correct me if I get anything wrong, because you're probably much more an expert on it than I am. But, you know, you're looking at the parts that you don't like in others, which are actually parts that you actually have shut away, that you've shut down in yourself for whatever reason. And so, you know, it's quite hard to look at that stuff. You have to be very transparent with yourself. I'm lifting open the box of like all the things in my current life that I still get triggered by, you know, where is that really coming from? And, you know, and why am I judging that thing in that person, you know, and stuff like that. So that's opening up a bit of a new, I've done a bit of that sort of, you know, work, like accepting who I am type stuff, but this is a little bit deeper and I'm journaling around it as well. And so, you know, I think that part of unsuppressing that stuff is to just talk openly about it. And you know, I was feeling some feelings yesterday. I was actually feeling some feelings of envy about something, and it was really kind of it was really grating on me. And I shared it with my husband, and I was really, really open about it with him. And it was quite interesting because it's quite vulnerable to do that. And he then said, you know what, I sometimes feel like that too. And so that was quite a nice moment where. I don't think sometimes you could go through your whole life, I reckon, and not share that stuff ever. Even like not look at it for yourself, but certainly not share it with one person. And it just stays. Well, what does that do to us? spiritually, mentally?
Becomes illness, doesn't it? It becomes illness. It becomes imbalances in the energy field, cracks happen in the energy field. That's where the other stuff can come in. And we end up in a circle, and we can't catch up with ourselves. And all we need to do is feel. You know, we all do it. Like somebody will come to you, I've just been dumped. It's like, I'm going to try and make you better. And just being able to just sit and hold space for that person and just say, what you're feeling is normal. Feel it.
Don't
try and come out with the magic words or the magic wand. Don't try to save them. Just say the best thing you can do in this minute, and I'm here for you, is to feel it. There's no bad or good. Just feel it.
Yeah.
Talk about what you're feeling. Yeah. Rather than that festering for years and becoming a disease. That's why they call it disease.
Disease. The validation thing is hugely important. I think, again, a lot of us have probably in our childhoods and also with our own parents in their childhoods, there is a tendency for, you know, to speak something as a child and, oh, don't be silly. Don't be silly. Oh, stop being scared of spiders. They won't hurt, you know. And it's like, it's coming from a good place, but unfortunately it is invalidation.
Yeah, that's another one, is it sticks and stones will break my bones, but names can... I just said that, you know, old Claire would have said that to a child. Sticks and stones can break bones, but names shall never hurt me. And I actually think that names hurt more than sticks and stones.
Of course they do, yeah.
You get a stone thrown at, you can put a plaster on it and whatever, and what you get a name called, especially if it's in one of your weak spots.
Yes, if it's in
your... And it can go on for your whole life.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's fascinating stuff. So interesting. But I'm conscious that I need to probably wrap the conversation up, sadly. So I'd just love to ask you, what would be your top three tips to help somebody on their sober journey with all your, you know, wisdom and experience and everything that you are today? What would you share with someone else?
Love yourself. Love first, because I think if you don't love yourself, it's a non-starter. Time. Well, I could do more than three. Time, self-forgiveness, and some form of spiritual healing, be it meditation, Reiki, regular Reiki, and shamanic healing as well, because shamanic healing goes in and takes those big traumas out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do it for yourself as well, because when you're trying to do it for somebody else, you can't do it. It's like dieting. I know it's a lot bigger than dieting, but do it for yourself.
Yeah. Hugely important. Yeah, it's got to come from inside, hasn't it? It's got to be an internal, intrinsic motivation.
Mm.
Because otherwise it's just very, very difficult to achieve if it's not your own idea, like your own true desire.
Mm. And a support network as well. Be it online, if you depending on how isolated you are, some type of group or just a support network. Get a good group of people around you that can support you.
Yeah, that's lovely. That's really lovely. That was 6, but I let you have it because it's been just such a
keep going.
It's such a wonderful conversation.
3 hours left. You'd be like, oh my God, she's going to be going for 3 hours.
Oh dear. Claire, where can we find you? And just remind us again of your wonderful services and things. So yeah, the stage is yours.
So shamanic healing, Reiki, I do it all via Zoom as well. So it's international. So shamanic healing, I've got a website, which I'll send you the link for. Reiki, mentoring, readings. And when I do readings, it's not about predicting the future. It's about looking at the energies of your life, of just what's at play. Because if you go for a reading and they say to you, you're going to meet a man called Dave in 2 years' time, and you're in trauma, what's between you and Dave? This is about looking at your energies. Why is your life how it is now? How can you help yourself meet Dave?
Yeah. Yeah. I just find myself hanging on your every word. I love it. Wow. And so on Instagram, you're at Healing for Ascension.
Yeah. And then also YouTube, it's Claire Thackeray. I'll send you the link for that as well.
Claire Thackeray. Yeah, excellent. Thank you so much. What a great conversation. Hope everybody enjoyed it, learned something, and maybe, who knows, could have triggered a little spark in someone that's going to just go on a mad deep dive.
Yay. I've enjoyed being on here, actually. Thank you.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. So thank you to everyone and catch up soon.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.